This episode of Is It Beer Yet? And all the work we do at NeoZazz is made possible by the generosity of our Patreon supporters. Support for NeoZazz through Patreon is what keeps everything we do going online and ad-free. If you'd like to learn more about how to help support all the work we do at NeoZazz.com, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/NeoZazz. Welcome to Is It Beer Yet? I am Matt, and this episode is all about our beer, Less Than 12 Parsecs IPA. This episode is, without a doubt, the most unique episode of this series we have done yet in so many ways. First, from the things we've recorded, as you're going to hear very soon, as soon as I'm done with this intro, to how much we've changed this beer from idea to the final tasting. In between there, I've done things with this beer that I have never done before in brewing. One big thing, which will become real evident when it comes up. Not going to give that away, but just when you think everything is normal, you're going to see it's not so normal in this episode. Let me start out with saying this episode, unlike other episodes, is about 3.5 months, almost 4 months in the making. This is the longest time span I've ever recorded over for one single beer. In fact, I have done at least one beer, or it was the cider, while this was still fermenting and aging. And I'm trying to remember if the one before that was. I don't think it was, but there's another one that another episode that's about to come out that was also being done while this was aging. So this is a long one, and you'll hear why. Also, want to add in the beginning here, and it's, I don't know if it's going to be self-explanatory or not, but I'll go ahead and explain it. This beer is a project beer for our, and named after or inspired by our show Star Wars in Character, Less Than 12 Parsecs, the Star Wars reference. And with that, I had invited Dave, one of my co-hosts from Star Wars in Character, to help me decide what we wanted this beer to be. You're going to hear and what our original idea is, and you're going to hear that change a lot, including the name. So don't be surprised or think that you're continuing on the wrong episode while we're calling this beer something else. Its name changed, the style has changed, the taste has changed, and even a method of getting the final product has changed so much from this very first opening recording after this intro. Again, most unique episode I think we ever put together. I think that's all the preface I need to give you. I just wanted to make sure I pointed out why things sound like we're talking about a different beer when we start off with. That's because this does change by the end. This is a long episode. I'm not going to lie. I recorded a lot of the process and did a lot of new things here. And this is probably the longest. I haven't put the recordings together yet, but it's probably the longest episode of Is It Beer Yet so far. So you're probably used to about under an hour. I'm assuming this is going to be over an hour because I think the opening conversation with me and Dave is a half hour in and of itself. So, all right, with all that, no need for me to make it any longer. Here are the recordings for Less Than 12 Parsecs IPA. Dave is with me tonight, and we are about to plan out this beer. We don't even have a name for it yet. We don't even have a recipe. We don't even know it's going to be beer. By the time we're done, we might have a recipe for bundt cake.
That would be good.
A moist, moist bundt cake.
Don't say moist.
I'm sorry. Oh, I can't. Freaking Duncan Hines has got me ruined now.
Don't do that.
Don't do that. So, okay. I have nothing but a blank slate in front of me. I don't even have a name. I just have a name because I had to open a file for the recipe, and it's called right now called Swick Brew, but I haven't even saved it, so we can change the name. Nothing. We got basically a digital whiteboard here. So you already said you had some ideas, so I am all ears for this Swick inspired beer.
Okay. I do. You gave me some homework, and I'm a good student. So I did some research on different kinds of hops and came up with ideas for things that would involve Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
And you're going to, I guess, either shoot me down or maybe tweak these or do whatever. I have my idea for the one I'm most proud of. I'll save that for last. Okay. So the other ones are just kind of like maybe ideas for future things, even. I mean, whatever, you know, whatever you think. Because this whole process I'm fascinated with. I listen to the show, and I don't brew, but I'm certainly interested in brewing, and I love hearing the whole concept, and more importantly, I want to taste these goddamn things.
Well, let's actually, before we start, yeah, I did have this idea earlier this morning to ask you, and I forgot while we were talking. You bartend at a, I guess it's a microbrewery, technically. Not technically, it is a microbrewery, isn't it?
Yes.
You must have picked up something being surrounded by all that by now, haven't you? It's been like a year or more you've been there, isn't it?
We've been open actually a year.
Oh, yeah.
Just a couple days ago.
Yeah, we just talked about that, and I'm already asking a stupid question. Remember that conversation we had 3 minutes ago that we had our 1 year birthday? No, I don't at all, apparently.
Yes, I work at the Proper Brewing Company in Quakertown, Pennsylvania, and are owned by a lovely family, husband and wife team, Brian and Chris. And Brian is not only our co-owner, but our brewer. And I ask him questions from time to time and try to pick up things when I do time to time. My favorite thing to do working there, this to you, this will sound normal. To other people, I've told them this and they think it's weird. My favorite thing to do is to go to our hop fridge and just kind of stick my head in there. Yeah. Like, I'll just, like, if I'm walking by it, I'll be like, hop fridge. And you just kind of stick your head in and, like, close the door a little and just inhale.
That is, this may have been on a recording I've done on one of these shows. This show's interesting. Like, Star Wars in Character, I can remember details on almost every episode because we do it so fast. We record it, I edit it, I post it, and then I do tend to listen to it again sometimes. So it's like three times in a row, so it sticks in my head. This show takes a month to produce. So I don't know if I've told the story or not, but I have a vacuum pack of all my hops in the freezer, and it's kind of a mini version of what you talk about. The second I break the seal on that vacuum pack and the air sucks in and then pushes back out, that is probably one of the best moments of the brew day, is when I open that hop bag.
Absolutely. It's intoxicating. Yep. Just the plan itself. So I love doing that. So even doing this homework that you gave me, I and talking to Brian, and just, I mean, I go to a lot of breweries.
A lot.
Dozens and dozens. And a lot of times you go on tours. Even, I don't know if you know this, have you ever been on we're pretty close to the state of New Jersey. In the state of New Jersey, when you go to a brewery, there's a mandatory tour.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No.
Now, people do it different ways. So if you're from the tri-state area and you're a Jersey guy or girl, different places will handle it differently. They won't let you drink at their brewery. It's a state law. Huh. until you've been educated, and that's what they call it. You have to be an educated consumer of alcohol, and they do that by actually maybe taking you on a tour. Some people sit you down and make you watch a video.
Oh, God. That some part, the video part would that'd be a little much. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but yeah, I mean, that's, ugh.
it would be a little heavy handed.
Yes, that's it. That's a good word for it.
Some places, one that I can remember specifically is a very small place called Cape May Brewing in Cape May, New Jersey. It's a really great place. They kind of call you over. They open the door and they say, "Look in there. That's our brewery." And they shut the door and I go, "Okay, what can I get you to drink?"
That's how you do it.
So, like, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe they get in trouble with the state liquor board or something. But that's one of my favorite breweries in New Jersey. And even along with the hop stuff, I go on a lot of tours. And that brewery specifically, I remember they were growing hops up the side of the building when you go in.
Mm-hmm.
I love, like, and I've gone on other tours and they give you the hops and you can crush them in your hand and then rub your hands together and smell it. And then your hands smell like hops the rest of the day. I love that kind of stuff. I went to Amagong a couple of weeks, well, this summer, and you can see their hop fields.
Oh, I mean, wow.
They grow them all right there. Their hops grow. They grow like weeds. They grow straight up. And these things, I can't even tell you how tall these are. Like maybe 15 feet high hops, you know, like on like that they have growing up racks and stuff. I love that kind of stuff.
I watched a ton and read a ton about brewing. I mean, this is by far the most self-educated thing I've done outside of school. And there was one thing I was watching that was fascinating that I want to try. It was a hops farm. And when this particular brewer, I wish I could remember the brewery so I can give him credit, but I can't remember it. When he comes to pick hops for a new recipe or whatever, he usually comes with a very innocuous, light beer base, like all malt. And he'll come with that in like a growler, and he'll take the hops right off the vine and kind of rub them in his hands and put it in his mouth and drink that light beer through the hop to get a good taste of an idea of how that hop is going to work in a brew. And I want to try that. I really want to try that sometime.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I just love the whole idea of it. In fact, one of our bartenders, a guy named Kyle, really great bartender, funny guy, great bartender. You know, like he's really cool. Mm-hmm. He when we first started, we actually serve liquor at the brewery as well because they've changed the state liquor laws. If you have a brew pub license, you can serve liquor that has been distilled in the state of Pennsylvania.
Oh wow, okay.
So if you look at the law, you can actually kind of serve whatever you want, but the letter of the law was supposed to be that. So that's what we do.
Yeah.
We serve Pennsylvania distilled liquors. And he was going to make a drink with hopped vodka. And all he did was take vodka and throw a bunch of hops in it and let it sit. And we were supposed to be making drinks with this hopped vodka. One of my other coworkers, Matt, he and I were like, well, let's just taste the vodka. We sat there and just drank the hop vodka. It was so good.
I hear it in like, a B-52 voice. Hop vodka. Nah, nah. Sorry. Had to get that out.
Maybe that's what they're really saying.
It could be.
But yeah, whenever we have a new thing, I always try to pay attention to the ingredients and stuff like that. And I have a favorite hop. It's actually not on one of the recipes that I'm pitching to you today.
Oh, it's not?
No. My favorite hop is Citra.
Yes, that is. I haven't used much of it, but I am. That is. It gives me. What am I trying to say? If I want to get a citrus flavor out of one, that is about the easiest one to extract it from, I've found so far.
Right. I don't have it on one of my recipes just because I was going for something here. And you'll see probably what I was going for when I start.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm ready as I don't know what I'm doing, so go for it. You're as prepared as I am.
Okay. So these are my just throwing it out there, maybe for the future. I don't have a full idea yet.
Okay.
I'm saving that for last.
All right.
I kind of went with the hops that I like and tried to. You said you don't have a name for this. I was trying to already do it backwards. Use the hop, come up with the name to make the beer. Because I think that you would agree that both you and I are pretty hoppy guys in general.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As far as what we drink. And I didn't used to be. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't like when I... Even a couple of years ago, was really trying all kinds of stuff. I was pushing away IPAs, and now I can't get enough of. Give me, you know, wreck my palate. Like I want to be destroyed when I drink stuff. That's what my first thought was. If I was going to pitch something to you, it had to be an IPA.
Yes,
or at least a pale, like a hoppy pale.
It's funny. I wasn't sure what you were exactly going to do. I should have known, especially when it comes to something you're interested in and beer. You certainly are that you would have gone above and beyond. But just in case you didn't have something ready, I had a couple ideas ready, and pretty much all of them have. If they're not directly IPAs, then they're pretty damn close. So that's kind of funny. We're both on the same page with that right off the bat.
Okay. Good. I'd love to hear your ideas then too. I'll give you my runners up that I just kind of came up with ideas, but this is not the thing. I like Cascade hops.
Yes.
So somehow using and like I said, you at this point certainly know far more about this than I do. Using whatever you needed to do make an IPA with a Cascade hop and call it Podcastcade.
That's good.
So you're just taking Cascade and putting a T in there. Something about that. That doesn't necessarily have anything to do with Star Wars, but could be used for anything. You know, any of these podcasts.
Right. Yep.
Another hop that I like is Chinook.
Oh, yeah. That's the Arrogant Bastard hop.
There you go. I just had one yesterday. So this one, I'm telling you, I'm just spitballing here. The first thing I thought of when I thought of Chinook was Shira Wook.
Oh, God.
Which
Shy Chinook?
Yeah, I was trying to come up. So that's pretty good. That's better than anything I had come up with. But, you know, people who are diehard Star Wars fans will get a kick
out
of
that. That's true, yeah. Yep.
Everybody else on the planet will say, what the hell are you talking about? So this is like the most esoteric one.
Right.
Another hop that I like is, and any combination of these is good. I mean, a good IPA will have several.
Yes, they do, it. Yep.
I like Galaxy hops.
Mm-hmm.
That one's easy. Yeah. This is like Galaxy Far, Far Away Pale Ale or something like that. But those aren't my things. Here's my thing. Are you ready?
Yes.
And you're going to tell me, I guess, whether or not this can be done, right?
Like, it can be done. It's just, do I have the resources, knowledge, and equipment to do it is really the question.
Okay. Because I even looked up on sites where you can buy hop pellets of these, and they are okay. Available. So, because I didn't want to like mention something that, like I said, like I actually learned a lot about hops in doing this. I only looked at American hops. I mean, there's German, there's Australian, there's English. I stayed away from that kind of stuff because I figured I was going to hopefully do something that you could at least get your hands on.
Right. Okay.
If this is even going to happen, combining two hops. One which is called Falconer's Flight Blend.
Okay.
With a hop called Millennium.
Yeah.
Somehow concocting this, however it's done, that it comes out to be 12%.
Oh, God.
And you call it Parsec Pale Ale, which is 12% with the 12 parsecs and is made with Millennium and Falconer's Flight Blend hops.
I will tell you this, and I'm not saying this for a yes or a no, but I will tell you that when Force Awakens came out, just about every brew supplier has made a kit called Millennium Falconeers.
Okay, so I'm not coming up with something new.
Not in this particular case, yes. Or no, I should say.
Have you had any of these? I mean, have you seen how they came out?
No. So I'm willing to try it. We just want to. Oh, you're calling it 12 parsecs, though, so it's not the same. But I mean, the Falconeers and the Millennium has definitely been used so far.
So that's what I was thinking. Instead of calling it Millennium Falcon because it's those two hops, you call it Parsec Pale because I like alliteration and things anyway. Someone who's astute. Were they drinking this first, they would recognize that it's called Parsec. Mm-hmm. And they would go, oh, that probably has something to do with Star Wars. If you're like me and most beer geeks, you like a story on your label.
Yes.
Which tells you what's in it, you know, little details, maybe a little story, you know, that kind of thing.
As I say, apparently I hate writing and would just rather do an hour long podcast explaining each beer, but
there you go.
Hey, there we go.
Just transcribe the whole podcast and stick it on.
Yeah.
Stick it right on the label, tiny little letters. So someone would, and this is all like, you know, would this be in a bar or a liquor store that someone would see it and see Parsec Pale and a Star Wars fan would go, oh, Parsec, that is probably Star Wars, it has something to do with Star Wars. Read the label to find out that it has those two hops in it. You don't call it those two things because
right.
that's too on the nose.
Right.
And then a really astute Star Wars beer fan would keep reading the label and see that it's 12%. And really, it would all come together and hit home. Or doesn't even have to be Parsec Pale. Could be Kessel Run.
Oh, yeah. Ale. Okay.
You're combining the name of the ship, the fact that it's around 12%. You know, I love a strong beer anyway. Yeah.
That is going to be either the tough or the hard part here. So
the 12% part.
Yeah. But let's keep We're going to keep at it here. I'm going to make a real quick base here. And then we'll just, I'm going to throw in the hops just as a, just to get some numbers here. And then we'll mess with the hops and I'll see what I can do. Cause I got an idea. I'm going to see what's going to happen when I put that idea in here. So let's see. Let me pull up an IPA base.
Okay. Because as far as the other things, I mean, I know from going to breweries and things like that, the thing that makes alcohol is yeast eating sugar.
Yes, yes.
So to me, I guess my question is, now that you've done this, and I have never asked a brewer this, do you shoot for an alcohol percentage, an ABV, or does it just happen and you measure it afterwards and see what it is?
Right now, whatever happens, happens. I'm not adding anything to it to get anything different. So it's like I've been averaging in the 5% range. Blonde, this, what I'm drinking right now, miscalculated blonde is 4.7. That's the lowest so far. Everything I've done has been like over 5.2, 5.4. And that's without doing anything to get an alcohol range. So.
Okay.
I got some idea. You know what?
This really would be, if it was being ranked on serious lists, it would be a double IPA.
Yes, yes.
I would think. I mean, I've had things. I mean, that's pretty high. I mean, when I go to the store, I figure if I'm going to buy something, I'm getting my money's worth.
And I never thought of it that way.
I have bought things that I knew I wouldn't even like just because they were high alcohol content, especially like Dogfish Head is probably the most experimental brewery that I can think of off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And they made two things that I had last summer, which were 18 and 20%.
Oh my God.
And I knew I was going to hate them because they were fruit beers. And I'm not a huge fan, but I bought them anyway because it's like, this is 18%. I'm going to drink it because they really, you know, sought out making it this strong and they're going to get my $4, you know? I mean, beers like that are usually a little more expensive too.
True.
Does that factor into when you're making something, the cost of, you don't care?
No, not right now. No, I'm not even going for efficiency. I end up having more beer than I can keg. I'm getting better at that, but right now I'm not even really worried about that.
Okay.
All right, let's see. I almost got this base built here. I'm going to add...
The other things I was thinking, and these didn't really have anything to do with Star Wars, but at some point, because I was thinking along the same lines with you and knowing what a fan of the NASA program you are...
Mm-hmm.
Doing something with either Apollo or Challenger hops.
Oh, right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Like some kind of, I mean, I don't know if that would be appropriate to do some kind of Challenger tribute ale kind of thing.
Yeah, why not?
But yeah, like just the fact that these hops are named these things, they beg for you to do something like that with them.
Right. I agree.
And that's what real breweries that are mass producing do. Like the names of the things are often based on the hop that's in it or the malt or whatever, you know, like whatever they're using. They use the ingredients to make the names. That's to me the most fun part of brewing is making names and the amazing like artwork that you've been doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks. that's always the last thing to do, and by then I'm like already thinking of the next beer. So those are a little rushed.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I saw them. They look fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
I'm such a sucker that I will buy stuff
on the yeah.
I mean, it's embarrassing to say, but I'll buy something based on the label.
I've done that. No, I don't think that's that unusual at all.
Yeah, it shouldn't be the way, but I get suckered in easily. So,
okay, done here. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't know because I'm not a brewer. I tried to brew once and I screwed it up.
Oh, really? What happened?
It was one of those kits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was a Pilsner. I made a Pilsner and it came out tasting like apple juice.
It was still really young.
And I followed the directions. I mean, I wouldn't know to do anything else but follow the directions.
Right, right.
And it was awful. But the most fun, and I bottled it and everything. It came with all the stuff. The most fun thing was making the label and naming it. Right. And because it was my test. It was my first test. I called it Sibilance. Like check one. I called it check one Sibilance. And I put and the label was Tom Hanks from the Wayne's World sketch.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was the most fun part of it. It was awful.
That's how I started. I started with a kit. And the ones I made were not drinkable at all. But I don't think I would have gotten... I don't think I would have ever understood what was happening in brewing had I not done those kits. And that made everything else make sense, mm-hmm. if you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If I hadn't gone through that process and gotten a beer out of it, albeit a incredibly undrinkable beer, I probably wouldn't have continued and moved on to all green because I wouldn't have understood what was going on.
Right.
All right. Let's see. I've built the base, and without... any additions, it's 6.9%. So the idea I had, how does this sound? I was thinking of adding some honey to it to give it some more sugar content.
Okay.
So let's see.
And when the yeast eats the honey,
yes,
it is hopefully creating more alcohol.
Yeah. So I'm going to put it in at flame out. I'm going to put a pound of honey in at flame out.
Is there anything... Is that the go-to thing for something like that? That's one of the many go-to things.
I mean, you can add just plain table sugar. You can add corn sugar, which really doesn't have much of a taste. But I figured if we're going to do this, let's see if we can add another layer of complexity to it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put in a pound of honey. That takes us to 10%.
Mm.
Let me see if I add some corn sugar then to get it out. Or just maybe some table sugar.
Let's see. Do people ever add like molasses or yes. syrup oh, or yeah. anything like yep. that too?
Yep.
Okay.
Let's see. What are the sugar choices we have? Milk sugar. I don't think I want a milk IPA.
That would be weird.
Brown sugar, candy sugar, cane sugar, dextrose. That's what I'm thinking.
Cad Bane sugar. I'm still trying to think of Star Wars stuff.
So that takes us to 11.4 with a pound.
If it was just
half a pound. Sorry.
If it was 11.5, we could round up to Ooh. 12.
I typed in the wrong. I meant to put in 10 ounces. I put in 10 pounds, and that shot it up to 37%. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
Oh, my God. That would be terrible.
That would be good. Who cares what it tastes like?
0.65, why is this not going an ounce? I don't care. I can do math here. So it should be about 0.63 for 10 ounces. Almost. Let me try 0.62. And luckily, I have a shit ton of dextrose when I used to bottle prime, so that I can just dump that right in. Okay, 10 ounces of corn sugar and a pound of honey in addition to... The I'll tell you exactly what I got going on here for the rest of it then. But in addition to that, takes it up to 11.7.
That's 12%.
Okay. All right. So what we got here, let's see how this, I don't know if this will mean anything to you, but I'll read it off to you. For the grain bill, I got 6 pounds of pale ale malt, pound of Munich malt, half pound of caramel 20, a quarter pound of honey malt. That should give it a little slightly dark gold color, but not quite amber. That'll be the malt base. And then the since the Millennium, if I'm reading this right, let me go back to my notes quick. I think the Millennium is an aroma hop.
I think it's a bittering hop from what I read online.
Yes. Okay. It is a flavoring hop. My bad. Okay. So that can go in for the entire 60 minutes. And the Falconeers, well, there's two types of Falconeers. Which one did you say?
It was Falconer's Flight Blend.
Okay. Okay. There's a... What is it? It's like a 7C or something, or C7?
Yeah, C7.
That's the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Okay, that's a both. So, okay, this should work. So, let me just change the type. Oh, I can change that later. Okay, so if I put in the Millennium for the whole time, put a half ounce in Millennium for 60 minutes, half ounce of Falconeers at 15, maybe I'm going to change this. I'm going to change a quarter ounce of Falconer. I had a half ounce of Falconers in the last minute, but since the Millennium is also a flavoring. Oh, no, that's for more aroma. No, I'm going to stick with that. Falconeers at the 1 minute, and then we're going to dry hop a combination of both, a quarter ounce of each.
Nice.
For 5 days, maybe 7 days. All depends on the fermentation. I always write down 5 days, but if the fermentation's still going crazy, I won't touch it till the fermentation's always going. But you've seen those videos I sent you of the yeast going crazy. If they're still going crazy, I'm not going to pull it out. But if they're done, then I'll take it out. So... yeah, I think that's what we got. So, did I say the sugars? Yeah, 10 ounces of corn sugar and a pound of honey. This is going to be the strongest beer I've made if this comes out.
Is that a bad thing?
No, no, that's good. IBUs are going to be 53.2.
That's not that high.
That's not. So I'm going to change something here.
So this, it's... like I said, like Parsec Pale, you know, like that to me would be, even though it's a high alcohol content, it wouldn't be extremely hoppy.
Right. No, it's still not going to where I want it to. I want to raise it up by like 10. There we go. I got it to a 60.7.
Okay.
I want a little higher than that, than the 50. Okay, so, yeah. All right, now, what did you say? 12 Parsecs Ale Pale? 12 Parsecs Pale, right?
I said Parsec Pale.
Oh, Parsec Pale, yeah, okay.
Because then people can read it and see, you know, and he says in the movie, he says it made the Kessel Run in under 12 parsecs. So if it's 11.
That's true, yeah.
If it's 11.7,
yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that you would see, you know, on the label of, like, there's always like little jokes on good beer labels, and it would say, you know, you point that out, you know, like that it's just under 12.
Right. Yeah. No, I follow you. That is actually funny.
This is impressive.
Oh, you know what? I forgot. I'm sitting here doing stupid math. Let me reset everything. Not everything. Let me reset these hops. I forgot. By the way, for anyone listening that's interested, I'm using a program called Beersmith, and that's what I just typed in everything, and it's telling me all the numbers that they're going to be. At the bottom here, there is it tells me what the IBUs are going to be. I can actually type in there. Let's say I want it to be like, 75. I guess I got to turn on editing here. Okay, let's say I want the IBUs to be 75. I can slide. There's a little arrow thing that there's like it's red, yellow, and green. I guess red is like dangerous because I'm sliding it in the red to get 75. But let's just say I want it to be 75 IBUs. I type that in and adjust all the hops additions for me.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it raised everything up to point. I had everything at a half ounce. I raised everything up to 0.71 ounces.
It's really cool. Actually, do a lot of people use that, you think?
Yes. I'm sure they do. Yeah.
Okay.
So actually, I wanted it like more at 65, and it raised everything or lowered everything to 61. So that's where I'm going to stick it. That didn't sound right. That's where I'm going to leave it.
Stick it.
So Parsec Pale. All right. I think we got something.
All right. Well, I mean, just an idea, like you said. Like, I'm sure that there are things to consider that I am, you know, very unaware of. But those were my ideas. So, nope. Just spitballing.
Nope. This will be interesting. The honey is going to be the interesting part. I've always wanted to try adding honey because I always see people adding honey to get the alcohol content up. So, the corn sugar is kind of like a safety net. It's like, I don't want to go over a pound of honey, especially for a 3-gallon brew. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting in the corn sugar, which is basically, I mean, it has a sugary taste to it, but not like table sugar. So this isn't going to affect the taste that much and bump us up to near 12. But the honey, I really want to see what a honey does to this IPA.
All right.
Let me save the file after all that work. I am a little tired and could see me hitting close and losing this. There we go. Parsec Pale by Neozaz Brewing. 11.7%, 65 IBUs. We'll have to bottle a couple for the guys at Brews and Blasters when they come down for celebration and save them for them. That should be well aged by the time they get here.
There you go. I love it.
All right. Well, you did the easy part. Now I got to do all the work.
Yeah, that's just like our regular shows.
Pretty much, yeah.
Somebody has an idea and Matt has to do hours and hours of work. So there you go. Same, same.
Yep. That's Neo's as. Good morning. It is brew day for the beer you just heard Dave and I talk about and make the recipe for. I'm actually going to talk about the recipe a little more here now because we made that 2 weeks ago. And I studied a little bit of what is what each thing we're going to add to up that alcohol content was going to do. And it's really not going to do what I want it to do for the flavor of the beer. Mainly, putting in a whole pound of honey is going to really give a dry taste. And I don't want a dry taste on this. So we adjusted the recipe quite a bit. And what it really comes down to is increasing the grains to get the alcohol content up first. And then putting in a couple more additives to get the alcohol content up. So here is the final, the new and the final grain bill for the brew today. It is going to be 6.5 pounds of pale ale malt, 1 pound of Munich malt, 12 ounces of honey malt, 6 ounces of crystal malt. Then we get into the hops. Hops have also been increased a little bit to get the, the IBUs up. So we've got 0.75 ounces of Millennium Hops at 60 minutes, 0.75 of Falconer's Flight C7's blend at 15 minutes. Then we have we get Falconer's Flight again as 0.75 ounces at the last minute of the boil. Then we have, there's a dry hop, there we go, 0.5 ounces of Falconer's Flight again and as a dry hop for 5 days. For the additives to get the alcohol content up, corn sugar is still the big thing because that is going to increase alcohol without doing too much the overall taste and feel and body of it. So that is 1 pound of corn sugar. That's the easy one. To mess with it a little more, we got 4 ounces of brown sugar, and then the honey's been dropped from 1 pound, which is 16 ounces, of course, down to 4 ounces. So huge drop in the honey. Huge drop. Been reading, even at flame out when you add honey, even though all the sugars get eaten by the yeast and turn into alcohol, it still does affect the taste a little bit. So I want to see what the honey does, but I didn't want to see what it did with a whole pound for when I was reading. Yeast, that's something. Here we go. I mentioned in the last episode, we're going to try something new. We've got a liquid yeast. It is a Trappist Ale by W Yeast. Liquid yeast, it's a smack pack, which means there's liquid yeast inside there. It ships cold. It's surrounded in an ice pack. There's a little nutrient bag in there that you smack and break open, and you mix it up and let it sit overnight. My biggest fear of it was that even though it was rather tepid here in Florida, even with the transit time and the Florida heat, like it just sitting out there waiting for it to arrive, even with the ice packs, it would get too hot and the yeast would die. Luckily, that's not the case because the indication that the yeast is healthy is that the pack swells up and is hard to the touch, the bubble. And that's exactly what that yeast pack is. It is swollen up. I squeezed it. It's difficult to squeeze. I didn't put too much pressure on it because I didn't want it to pop because I'm not ready to use it. So we're looking good. Usually with these packs, you make a yeast starter, so you get enough yeast for 5 gallons. But this yeast is good for 3 gallons without it, and that's exactly what we're making. We're actually making a little less, so we're going to put a little more yeast in it, just a touch more. And we got the Trappist Ale yeast because it's a high yield or a high alcohol inducing yeast. That's probably not the right word, but it's made for high alcohol. It's made to service up to 12% alcohol in your beer, and we're going for 11.6, 11.7. It's the exact yeast we need. That's kind of the reason I got it. I wanted to try new yeast. I talked about that in the last episode. This actually gave me a situation where I needed to try new yeast and see what happens. So I'm kind of excited about that. As weird as that sounds. So that is it. I got to mix up the grains, sack the hops. Oh, I have to get water. Most importantly, I have to go get water, which I'm going to do now. I'm not going to record that. You know how that goes. I'll probably be back with the something to do with the brew. I was going to say the boil, but maybe something a little before that. Whatever it is, it's up next. Okay, the mash is started, and I am making a note on the mash because I wanted to let everyone know it's going to be a 75-minute mash.
because I'm trying to draw every little bit of sugar out of these grains as I can. Granted, I'll probably get most, if not all, at 60 minutes, but 15 minutes and wrapped up in its nice thermal jacket. And it's about 75 degrees, probably going to be about closer to 80 when I get out there. That last 15 minutes, the mash temperature shouldn't drop, so it should still be pulling just that little tiny little bit of sugars left. I know it's not going to be that much more, but we're trying to squeeze every bit of sugar out of these malts to get that alcohol content. We got two goals, and they're both even, not one before the other. We want a good taste. We want a high alcohol content. That's the goal with this one. So to achieve the high alcohol content, we got to get every bit of sugar we can naturally out of these. We're going to be adding some, of course, in the boil, as I just explained, but the more we can get out of this, the better, the quality it's going to be. Not the alcohol, but the beer. Well, both, I guess, in a sense. So 75 minutes, and that's it. So that's 8 pounds of grains, over 8 pounds of grains in there, steeping right now, or mashing. So it's just a waiting game at this point. So I'm gonna, there's not a whole lot I can do. I already boiled the hop sack for the dry hop, and I got the water on for the steeping already, but it's not going to take 75 minutes for it to get to 170 degrees. So it's a waiting game. All this is a waiting game between mashing, the boil, and then really the fermenting, and then the aging in the keg. It's all a waiting game. But it's all a really cool hobby. So that's it. We got the mash now. We'll be back probably with the boil. Okay, we're past the mash and onto the boil. I have 5 gallons of pre-wort. I don't know. I guess it's wort, even though the hops aren't there yet. But it's 5 gallons. That is a deliberate number because I'm going to boil this down to 3.5. It's going to be an extra long boil. I'm definitely going to have the 60-minute boil and then some. And that is to condense the sugar so we get that high alcohol content. It's a method I read about, haven't tried yet, but it's a deliberate over-sparging. So right now, I'm about to the hot break. Protein heartbreak is about the hot. Wow, did I say protein heartbreak? If I did, that's kind of funny. Protein hot break is about to start. I'm looking for my skimmer, which I set aside earlier and cannot find. And talking into a recorder trying to find it isn't really doing any good. So, and you can't see this. But anyway, I wanted to note that 5 gallon thing because that is something different, but something deliberate. So I'm going to go find my skimmer and be back with the boil. All right, this is an absolute first for this show and for me brewing, but I knew kind of in the back of my head, or maybe not so far in the back of my head, it was going to happen one day. On one hand, it sucks that it happened today on such an important brew, but on the other hand, it couldn't have happened at a better time if it was going to happen today. I ran out of gas, completely out of propane. Luckily, it was, we're going to say 10 minutes after I fired up the gas for the boil, so it didn't even get close to boil, which means anything that happens to the wort as I leave will be boiled right out anyway. I covered it really, really well. I went and got some foil and double foiled it to the top, then put the lid on top of that. Not that the lid's really gonna do anything. So I don't know what this is gonna do to the beer. Hopefully not much. Luckily where I go to get the gas is like not even going to be a 5-minute drive there and back, so that's 10 minutes, probably 10 minutes for a transaction, so 20 minutes. It's still in the one, it probably got up to about 160, the water, so it's still actually doing some sciencey, chemically stuff, but we're not at the boil yet. Hopefully it's not creating any off flavors. It may be, and that would suck. We're going to find out in a few months, or a month or so, but right now, my mission is to get the gas and get back to the boil ASAP, which is what I'm doing right now. All right, crisis diverted. As you can hear, the gas is going. Actually, that sound means there's way too much air getting in there, so I'm just going to turn that gas down a little bit so the gas doesn't blow out the flames. Temperature held really good. That whole time I was gone. Didn't really drop it all. I did a surface temperature reading when I left, when I came back, and it was exactly the same. And so hopefully everything's good. What's going to be interesting is, if this ends up being the best beer I've ever tasted, I'm going to have to raise the temperature to about 161, I think it was, in the kettle. Hold it for 20 minutes, and then boil. I will never remember that. Although I just said it, so maybe I can go back and refer to the recordings. We'll see. We'll see. Hopefully this doesn't have any real effect on it. Good or, well, I guess good is okay, but hopefully no bad. So, bring it up to a boil now. Should be ready in about 15 minutes, but it'll be right after this, or right after this for you. Okay, got the first hops in. I actually brought everything up to a boil and let it boil for about 10 minutes to condense the wort, get the sugars in there before we start doing the hops boil. So, first edition Millennium hops, which is 0.75 ounces of, are in there now. So we're waiting for the 15-minute mark to do the next one. Okay, we're well into the boil. In fact, we're almost at the 45-minute mark, and I am about to drop in the second hop sack, which is all Falconeer's Flight 7Cs. Smells really good. Very sweet, very floral. Familiar with the Falconeer's Flight. I guess that's... Oh, did I say Falcon's Flight? Well, Falconeer's Flight if I didn't. 7Cs. Familiar with the Falconeer's Flight. 7Cs is a, I think, a different variation on that, but still very good. I think it's actually a little lighter than the Falconeer's Flight, so... Anyway, we are about 20 seconds less than that, or about 15 seconds. I'm going to drop it in just a few seconds early. There it goes. All right, down the last 15 minutes. This is when things start getting crazy. This is when everything happens after waiting for 45 minutes. Okay, I got everything into the fermenter. This was kind of a longer brew day than it probably should have been. Well, I mean, the gas was one thing. Started just a little late. I don't know why else it seemed to take so long, but it did. It did. It's almost 4 o'clock, and I've got about literally an hour. I have to get everything clean, and then I have to get moving, as my wife's plans for my birthday start right about then. So, long brew day. Again, don't know why, but it's done. Smells fantastic. The color is fantastic. This is going to be interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing how this one turns out. I'm always looking forward to all of them, but I've never tried to increase the alcohol, proactively. If it increased through whatever the recipe was, fine, but is it deliberately? That's what I'm looking for. So this will be interesting. Very curious to see what this looks like. So we'll see. I'm going to let this settle down a little bit so I can take a drawing and get a starting gravity reading. And I'm going to oxygenate it and then pitch the yeast. I'll be back with the yeast because it's a new yeast. It's a liquid yeast, one I've never used before, and it's a yeast specifically for high gravity beers. So I'll be back with that recording right after this. Okay, one last thing to do for brew day before, although brew day is pretty much over since everything's put away, but this has to be done regardless. We have to take the original gravity reading, because the second most important part of this beer, apart from the taste, actually, it's not even first and second. There's two important parts, is taste, and then we're trying to hit that high gravity reading, so the high alcohol content. So we need our gravity readings to see where we're at. So the sample I took has been sitting here for quite a bit. Any sediment I drew from it's definitely at the bottom. The bubbles at the top are gone, so I'm about to drop the hydrometer into the flask here, which I just did, and it's spinning, and I'm sure, as usual, the numbers are going to stop behind the, I think it is, I was saying, as I'm saying that, it's actually happening. Oh, wait, nope, it's got enough momentum, I think, to turn around. It's kind of on the side. No, it's there. If you are wondering what I'm talking about, just look up a hydrometer on Google, and you'll see how this thing drops in a glass flask, and the one I have only has numbers printed on one side, and you spin it so it doesn't stick to the sides, and mine always ends up being behind. And this actually has, the numbers are reading behind me, so I'm going to turn the flask a little bit, let it settle. Okay, there we go. I can see the numbers. Just going to make sure it settles. Okay, stop moving, and it is 1.082. Let me see. Yep. Yeah, it's 1.082. I'm trying to get, usually I just kind of guesstimate, but that, I'm trying to look directly at the number here to make sure it's accurate. I'm going to call that one, actually it is, I guess 1.082. Yep, it's just on with that. Yeah, 1.082. Sorry, I'm being a little over meticulous here because I want this right. But that the top of the liquid, whatever you call that level, I'd say that's right on the 8.2, not on the 8.3. Kind of wanted to squeeze in that one last point so we get more alcohol, but I have to call that 8.2. So 1.082 is the starting gravity. And we'll see. And I'm using, like I said, the hydrometer. I'm not using the the refractometer anymore because I'm not getting right numbers. And this one is always giving me numbers that look like they should be right when you're talking about beer. So 1.082 for the starting gravity on this beer. I pitched the yeast, and I don't know what I was expecting to see. I said I was going to record it. Recording time kind of came and went. I opened up the pack, sterilized the pack of the corner I was going to cut, sterilized my scissors, cut it, dumped it in. It was liquid yeast, and it smelled yeasty. And I dumped it in, and I don't know if I was, when I said I was going to record it, if I was expecting some kind of chemical reaction, but of course nothing happened. The yeast just went in. The weird thing was, not weird, but the unexpected thing, I guess, I don't know, how do I want to say this? What I was expecting next didn't happen. That's a better way to say it. I've been using dry yeast up until now. And usually within the first few hours, the dry yeast actually, there is a reaction. I think the dry yeast actually comes to life. So you get kind of these clumps and these yeast sickles hanging from the top. Not a lot. The activity starts like 24 hours later. So I checked the beer every 2 hours or so for the rest of the night until he called it a night, and nothing ever happened. I was worried that I did the yeast wrong. I was like, it died in shipping or something. So I was a little worried. My mind was laid to rest the next morning when I opened up the cooler and saw looking inside the fermenter and the carboy, and I had a krausen, nice thick krausen, and those chunks of yeast just rolling around in there like the beer was boiling. So my fears were laid to rest. So that is where it's at right now. It is super aggressive, and the airlock is popping as I talk. So that is the first 24 hours of the yeast report on the 12-bar 6. It has been 48 hours for the 12-bar 6 fermentation, and this has never happened before. I opened up the cooler, look at the carboy, and the airlock is full of krausen. So I had to quick whip together an overflow tube, and I got an empty bottle. I have a case of bottles in the garage for bottling this specifically to save so that the Stars and Character guys can try it when they come here in April. I got a bottle, put some sanitizer and water in it, shook it up real quick, let the tube from the stopper into the bottle, and got a makeshift overflow tube before things got too bad. Never had an overflow, and I have got a good, this is a 4.75 gallon carboy. I have 3.5 gallons of beer in here, so that's, what is that? That is a gallon and a quarter of krausen of overflow. So the yeast are doing their job. They're eating all that extra sugar and loving it, apparently. The yeast itself is the chunks are gone, but there is like just billions probably. I wouldn't hazard a guess. Billions of seeable particulates in there eating. I can't imagine what's there on a microscopic level. These are going nuts. This is the healthiest fermentation I have ever had. First blowover I've ever had, especially with all that extra room. And it's looking great. It smells great. The dry hop sack is in there somewhere. I can't even see it. I don't even know how to get to it. And good thing I don't need to. In fact, I'm supposed to take it out in 5 days. Well, that's 3 more days from now, so we'll see. That's still time. I usually, actually, when I've run dry hops before, I thought I'm not going to be able to get to it because it's too, the krausen's too thick or the yeast activity's too much. But that's all. It's always seemed to slow down. And then, I don't know, though. This is a new yeast for me. We'll see what happens. So I'm going to check back on it. I'll check it every day, but I'm going to record on it when it's time to pull that hop sack. Okay, it's the fifth day of fermentation. I'm supposed to pull the hop sack, but the yeast are still really going. And there's all those like billions of particulates I talked about, they're still there. And they're swirling all around. And the Krausen is just short of the top of the carboy. I was able to take the overflow tube out now and put the airlock back on. One thing I didn't note, I meant to note before, when as soon as I put that airlock in, I didn't get so much, or not the airlock, the and the airlock's making me think of this. As soon as I put in the blowover tube got about an inch of Krausen into it. I think the worst was over when I put it in. But the bubbles from the gas into that bottle, you could actually hear that. If it was quiet in the house, this is when I came home from work. If it was quiet in the house, which it was, and you stopped and listened, you could hear the popping of the bubbles in the sanitizer, and then of course echoing through the bottle, which I should have recorded now I think about it, but I didn't. But it was pretty neat. At first I had to figure out what that noise was, and then when I realized it was coming from the fermenter, I thought, oh, something bad happened. But it was just a neat little effect, and more science fun, I guess, in a sense. But anyway, this Krausen is still really thick, and the yeast are still really, really active. So I don't think I'm going to pull the hop sack out yet. Taking out the Krausen won't do too much. I mean, you break the CO2 cap on the top, but it's with the way this yeast is going, it's going to fill up again. And I'm not worried about infection as long as I do everything sanitary, but I'm not going to take it out yet just because I don't think it's really time to. So I'll check it back in another day. Okay, it's day 6, the day after I was supposed to take the hop sack out. The Krausen is dying down quite a bit now. It's actually really hard to see because I got quite a bit of gunk on the top of the carboy now because of that super fermentation a few days ago. Yeast is still really active. There's super little tiny ones that you can see, and then I'd imagine, of course, the ones I can't see. But I went ahead and took it out. I figured it was okay to do it. Took a big glop of the Krausen with it, but then that was about it. Pretty uneventful. I sanitized everything that the lid. I had to take the lid off, put it on a sanitized plate. I put the hop sack on a plate, sanitized on both sides in case something dripped. Put the cap immediately back on. Put the airlock on, and the airlock is still popping. That's how much activity is still going on. In fact, it looks like once every about 5 seconds, it gets a full pop. So every 5 seconds, there's enough yeast expelling gas to make the airlock pop. So that's it for now. I'm going to check it tomorrow, which will be a week, and we'll see where we're at. I think this one's going to be a longer fermentation than normal because this is, well, it's a lot more sugar than normal, and this is a high, what do you call it, a yeast that's made for high gravity beers. So I don't know. We'll check it out. I'll be back with another report right after this. It's day 7 of fermentation of the 12 parsecs ale, and it is still, those teeny tiny little yeasts are just not going anywhere. There are so many of them that this looks like a thick wheat beer, which we know, it's not. Well, it's not. If you don't know, it's not a wheat beer, obviously. It's an IPA. It's going to be an amber-colored ale with a lot of hops. It looks super thick, but it's not. It's not a, what do you call it? It's not sediment. It is the yeast. I don't know when this is going to stop. This is crazy. I guess it's normal for this. Again, it's not a yeast I've never used, and I never use this much sugar to get this much alcohol. I'm going to let it go until I see it clear for at least 5 days, like my normal brews are. So far, no sign of that. Not at all. 7 days, just a ton of activity. Still a Krausen on the top. In fact, the hole where the hop sack came through is covered. So, yeah, this has been the most fascinating one so far to watch. And if I look at the airlock, let's see, it's bound to pop here. I don't want to walk away from it. I don't know, I'm sorry. I guess I'm just saying phrases to fill recording time. That's exactly. I don't know why I said it. One went away from it. There we go. There's a pop. Now we're gonna see how long it takes for it to pop again. If it's even 10 seconds, which sounds long, that's not long, because my expansion ale, which I just finished, by this time there was no pops for like a minute. There we go. Wow, that popped again. That wasn't even, if that was 10 seconds, it wasn't, or if it was more than 10 seconds, it wasn't much more. So yeah, this is another day of super high activity on this yeast. This is really cool. This beer is definitely going to be unique. I don't know how it's going to taste. It's definitely going to be unique because it's going to have that high alcohol content, I'm sure, now. And it smells great, though. I'll say that. When the airlock does pop, the gas that's coming through smells terrific. So, all right, I'm going to close it up and wait another. I'm going to keep watching it. I'll report back when it slows down, maybe, or unless an unusual amount of time has gone and it still hasn't slowed down. Either way, I'll be watching this one close, and I'll be back right after this. It is day 11, and the yeast have finally visibly stopped. Obviously, just, was that three or four days since I last recorded, when you could actually see the yeast. So there's still living yeast in there, so there's still something happening. But it's finally clearing. It's not super clear, but it's a lot clearer than it was 4 days ago. So I drew a sample, because I want to see what our next gravity reading is. I want to see if we're on our way to that 12% mark. We're trying to actually get under 12, but that's the point. It has to be between 11 and 12. So I have my sample. Again, it's been sitting here for a little bit, but no sedimentation in this because it's so much clearer now. So, all right, I dropped the hydrometer, and it's spinning as usual. And I should actually start this before when I hit record, because it's a wait for it to lose momentum. It's coming around, and it looks like it's actually stopping somewhere I can read. It is. Okay, let's see what we got here. We are at 1.013. So let's see. I have my ABV converter spreadsheet on the Google Sheets program on my phone. So let's do the what's the math there? It's 82 minus 1369. So let me enter. Hold on, I gotta pull up the Sheets program. All right, and okay, so let me get in the field. So that's actually going to be 0.069. It's a difference. And that is 8.97%. So roughly 9% already. Okay. I don't know if I expected it to be higher. I mean, it's only within three of what it wants to be. And the yeast is definitely still alive. So I guess it's too early to say that that's what it's going to be. But 9%, though, just to take a step back from not seeing 11 yet, is that 9%, that's the highest alcohol content beer I've ever made. So that's something. So we're somewhere. We're definitely getting somewhere. So not much more to do, but wait. Fermentation for most of my beers is 2 weeks. This is definitely going to be 3 weeks. I mean, it's going to be 3 weeks or 2 weeks in just a few days. And I know they're still living yeast in there, so this is definitely going to be a 3 week fermentation. So we still got 10 days. Wait, is that right? Yeah, 10 days until we get the final gravity reading. So I think we're gonna get closer. I shouldn't get too worried yet, but we're definitely on the way. 9%, that's almost double. Heck, wait, 9%. Okay, 9%, that's just 1% away from completely doubling, I think, my highest beer alcohol content that I've ever measured before. So we're getting somewhere. That's definitely close. So I'll be back. I don't know. I'll see what when things start to look different in the beer, when there's something to talk about. Because, again, I've not fermented this long, and I've not fermented with this kind of yeast, and I've not tried to hit this alcohol level. So I got probably a few more things to talk about between now and kegging. It is day 14, and fermentation looks just about like it did on my last recording. But since it is at the 2-week mark, and it's when I, how much I usually, the length I usually ferment, I decided to take a drawing and see what the gravity is at 2 weeks, even though it's only 3 days later. I don't know if it's going to be a big change or a small change or really any change when all is said and done. So let's see here. This time I actually dropped the hydrometer before I started finishing that sentence. Still not long enough, though. I'm still waiting for it to spin around. So next time I'm actually going to, if I remember, I'm going to drop the hydrometer before I start recording. All right, it's going to come. Oh, yeah. It's in the back. I think it stopped spinning, so it's in the back. So now I got to kind of roll it over here. Okay, starting to see the numbers. Okay. All right, let me see what I got here. 1 point. Oh, that's 1.01. This the big bold numbers go in tens, and that's on the 10. So that's 1.010. That's definitely a different number. So let me do the math again here. All right. Oh, I need to go to the starting, not the last. So 82 minus 10 is gonna be 72. I didn't really need to do the math on there, so I do need to put it in my spreadsheet though to see what the alcohol content is. So open up alcohol calc. All right, so 0.072 is what the actual number is, and that makes it 9.36%. So we're over 9%. So it's still converting that sugars into yeast, and that's what is that point? That's about a 0.4% difference than last time in a couple days. So let's see, with another week of fermentation, now of course the yeast are dying off. I wouldn't really predict 0.4 over the next 7 days each day for each set of 2 or 3 days, but I do expect some kind of number, but I'm not sure. If it gets past 10, I feel better. I don't know. Not much more to say. Gonna give it another week and see what we got, and just go from there. But there's not a whole lot more we could do when we get to that point. So, didn't really have a stalled yeast. There was no point in adding yeast early on there. I mean, that probably would have done something. Actually, I don't know. This is kind of a learning curve for yeast for me. I know if you put too much yeast in, there's like they fight for the most readily available sugars, and a lot die out early. So then you kind of get lower gravities than you expect if you over yeast. So I don't know. I don't know. This is a new level. I don't want to say level. That sounds a little more extreme than it is. This is a new aspect to brewing that I'm now taking the time to learn. So we'll see. Okay. I think I said all I could say about this until we get to the final end of the fermentation on this, which should be probably next. All right, we are at day 19 of fermentation, so not quite at the full 3 weeks, but I wanted to take a gravity reading because since the last one, I've actually been doing some studying and some reading on what I could do if this fermentation doesn't get to the number I want. And there is something I can do, but I need to see if I'm going to do it and plan for it. So I made another draw, and I'm going to drop the hydrometer in, and as I say that, I remember the last recording where I said I should have done that before I started recording, but I did not. So we're going to have to wait again. I'll just edit out the long pauses anyway, but I have to wait. So let's see. Hydrometer's still going. All right. It's just about done. It's not all the way in the back, but it's kind of on the side, so I got to tilt my head over. Actually, I can't even really read the number doing that. I can only see that there's numbers there, so let's turn it. Let's go through the whole process. Okay. It's shaking a little bit. Wait for it to calm down and stop moving completely, which it has. And we are at 1.008. What was our last one? 1.010. Okay, that's not much of a change. But I can update my sheet here. I don't even have the calculator, so that's 0.2 change or 0.02 change. So that's 0.7074, and it says that makes it 9.62%. So yeah, it's not even, it may get to 10. It's got two more, 19, 20, 21, two or three more days, depending on when I keg it. It may get to 10, but it probably won't. It's definitely not going to get to 11 point something. So I have studied on what I can do, and I think I'm going to go ahead and do it. And I'm going to get all that together and record that. Just going to do that next. All right, it's kegging day, but that's not all that's going on today. You probably remember my last, well, of course you remember my last recording, the order you're hearing. I mean, it's only seconds, it's been days for me, but the last recording, we're only at about 9.6%. We want to get like 11.6, that's under 12. So I did a lot of reading on what I could do. Now, one of the things I could do if I really wanted to, but it's absolutely going to completely alter the entire beer, is I could have added some kind of sugar now and some more yeast and let it ferment for a little longer now. But introducing a new strain of yeast, even if it is the same brand and the same, that particular strain, unless it was from the same, I'm going to say vat for lack of a better word, it's still going to be different because they're living organisms. So chances of me 3 weeks later getting the exact same, I guess it's possible if I go back to the same supplier, but it's unlikely. The other thing to do, and which is what we're going to pursue right now, is fortifying it. That's where you add direct alcohol to it in a sense. A lot of options. This does also directly affect the taste, but you can control the taste, that effect, by picking what you're fortifying it with. A lot of things people do is whiskey or scotch. Some people have done vodka. Some people have done Everclear, seems to be popular. I don't want to mess with Everclear, and I also don't want to buy a bottle of Everclear because to fortify it to where we want, I'm going to have a ton of Everclear left over that I'm never going to drink. I'm not in college anymore. So did some research. Obviously want to go with high alcohol content, a.k.a. high proof when you're talking about spirits. I wanted to go with something that was, you're not going to find anything tasteless, but that it doesn't have, wasn't flavored. Scotch, you have wood and smoke. Vodka, I guess it would be a good choice, but I just didn't, that didn't appeal to me for some reason. Gin is flavored with juniper berries, orange peel, that kind of thing. So I went with something that is about as close to pure alcohol as Everclear without being Everclear. And also, once I figured this out, or kind of had this idea to use this, it seemed perfect for the theme of the beer. The beer is less than 12 parsecs. It is based after, of course, Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon. He's a smuggler. Really couldn't think of a, once I had this idea, couldn't think of a better solution to fortify with, or a better booze to fortify with than moonshine. In a sense, Han Solo was a bootlegger, at least with spice or whatever it was. So seemed absolutely perfect for this. So I have moonshine. This is straight up moonshine. It's a old smoky moonshine. It's white lightning, which means it's just, it's all grain spirits. It's not flavored. They of course have the apple pie. I think there's a cinnamon one. They have all kinds of flavors. There was one I actually wanted to try. Straight up, it was a different brand, and it was called Firefly, and the additions they put in it sounded really good, but I this one is like, this is just straight up moonshine. It's been proofed down to 100 proof, so it's 50% alcohol. So that's what we're using to fortify this with, and if my calculations are correct, this is based after, of course, a lot of people sharing a lot of knowledge, and me doing this for the first time. I've now scaled down the kegging of this beer because of all the samples I've taken. I've drawn a lot of beer off of it. Instead of kegging 3 gallons, I'm going to keg 2.5 gallons. So 2.5 gallons we want another 3% to get it to 11.6. Looks like I'm going to have to add 13 ounces of moonshine into the keg. That's, we'll see how that sounds like a lot. That's like almost dumping an entire beer plus. That is actually, it's a beer plus into it. That's a lot of liquid. So we're going to see what it does to it. This would actually be easier. This is one of those cases where it'd be easier the more beer I was making. The higher the numbers, the easier it is to round out. So I think my numbers are right. It's hard to tell. First time I've ever done this. And like I said, if I was doing 5 gallons, 10 gallons would be perfect. That's a super round number. But I'm not doing 2.5, and I think 13 ounces of moonshine. Well, in this case, 13 ounces of 50% alcohol solution. That's basically the numbers we're working with. It doesn't matter what it is, moonshine, whiskey, scotch, gin, rum, whatever it is, you're really, the numbers you're working with is the alcohol content of it. And this one happens to be 50% alcohol. So kind of lucky that's a kind of a round number too. But again, we're going to try 13 ounces. So I'm going to get everything ready. I'm actually going to keg half this beer, stop, put in the moonshine, keg the other half. The constant flow of liquid should give it a good mix. And then once I cap it off and or seal it off and pump some CO2 into the tank, then I can give it a little stir and a shake and mix it up here and there while it's there. But I don't want to stir it while it's open to the oxygen. So I want to add it in halfway through and then let that constant liquid flow kind of mix it up a little bit. So I'm going to get that all started, and then I'll be back. Okay, I got everything kegged. I didn't really want to stop and record because I didn't want to let that beer out in the air and get any more oxygenated than it was in the kegging process. So I just went ahead and finished everything. Not much to tell. You know the kegging by now if you've heard this episode. If you haven't, just go back to, God, how many was it? 5 or 6, at least 3 of those I recorded the kegging. The really only difference here was I stopped halfway through, poured in 13 ounces of moonshine. That was a lot. That's more than half of the bottle. That was a lot of moonshine. So I don't know what it's going to do. Actually, we're going to find out here. That's what this recording is about. But anyway, after that, I finished filling the keg, capped it off, pumped some CO2 in it to purge out all the oxygen, and now it is in my refrigerator. I threw a label on it in case I start stockpiling and start a pipeline here, that it's the 12 parsecs ale, and put it in the fridge, and I'm just going to let it sit there and age before I even touch it. This one is now with the addition of the moonshine, this is definitely has to be aged. I'm going to get all the off flavors, the malt flavors out of it once and for all. That sounded a little extreme. I was doing something else as I said that, and I tend to just say phrases to fill in time, except there where I apparently stopped and couldn't fill in any time. But anyway, I hope someone's getting a kick out of this. All right, what I wanted to do was, now, this is where I'm headed next. I did not, obviously could not taste any of this as it was going in a keg, because I didn't want to add any more outside anything to it. I didn't want to touch it. I have drawn another sample, and I've scaled down all of that, all of my additions from ounces and the gallons and whatnot, to grams. I know we're not apples and oranges. We're apples and dump trucks with measurements here, but my scale, that's the lowest it goes, is to grams. So I think I have enough, everything worked out of the grams of beer I have in this cup. And then if I raise it 2 more grams, that is going to be the exact ratio of what I just put in a keg. And I want to see what this tastes like. That's why I'm doing this. This might not be right. That is a weird conversion. Gallons to ounces to grams. But for just to see what we're, even get an idea of what we're going to get, we're going to try it. So I'm going to open, I closed with the moonshine. I'm actually glad I'm opening it now. I have the mic right next to it. Hopefully you can hear this. You can probably hear my cats as this ran by. Good thing they didn't do that while I was kegging. Could be cat fur in there. But anyway, I'm going to open the moonshine bottle. If you could hear that, I hope that the recording brought it up. I mean, it is a mason jar. This is moonshine. So that was the bottle. Ooh. Okay, I just got the aroma of it came out. So I have a little pipelet dropper here. I have my cup of beer, uncarbonated, of course, on the scale, and I'm going to just start dropping, I guess, say moonshine into it until I hit 2 grams, or 2 more grams. Okay, just went up 1. Very, very slowly. Okay, there we go. So 2 grams. So this should be the ratio. Should be. This is very experimental. This should be the ratio of moonshine to beer that I just put in the keg. So let me stir this up a little bit, because the moonshine is probably all on the top. All right, I'm going to give this a taste and see what we get. Hmm. Okay. I absolutely expected there to be an alcohol, a booze flavor, straight up booze because of the moonshine. You do taste the moonshine, but I'm happy to say that's not all I taste. Then again, I was also trying to taste the moonshine. Let me take another taste. I don't have a whole lot in here, but I do have enough for a taste or two. Okay, when I really taste it as a beer, I do taste the beer. The beer, that's the first, that is interestingly the first thing you taste. The moonshine is an aftertaste. So there's a little hoppiness. Of course, the malts are strong. It's fresh out of the fermenter. Not as strong as usual, though. And I don't know if that's a case of waiting another week or putting the moonshine in. I got enough for one more good taste. I just did a straight over the right down. What am I trying to say? Just a sip and a swallow, and it's. I mean, there's moonshine in it, and that's the last thing that hits my throat. But it's not as bad as I thought. It's not like I just made a flavored moonshine now, which was I kind of afraid of when I added that much. There's. I don't know if it's half and half. It's to really right now enjoy the beer before it's aged out and really mixed up. And assuming I did this right in this cup, it's beer first, moonshine later. So this is interesting. This is definitely the most unique thing we've done. So we'll see. Only time will tell at this point, literally. So I'm just going to wait. So let me seal up this moonshine, which will probably never see the light of day again, unless I have some friends over that just want to try moonshine. And all right. It is in the fridge. It is cooling. And we're going to wait weeks, literally weeks, not just a week, but at least 2 weeks, maybe more, to taste this once and for all, in a sense. And then this one's going to go to bottling. It's going to go to bottling because this needs to be saved and shelved and ready for when people come to visit. That, well, as you've heard in this episode, Dave specifically, so he can taste it. So that's it until tasting, I guess. And then we'll be back with that. Well, for you, it'll be shortly. For me, I got a little wait. Okay, we're not quite at tasting, and I'm actually in the studio, but I'm not recording. Well, I am recording in the studio, but I'm not using the studio gear to record. I'm using my usual recorder. Because I'm going to talk about a name change we had in the beer, a kind of an accidental name change. As I've said many times on this show, so much time passes between the initial idea and getting to the final beer that now that I started making the label, I remembered Dave had said parsecs. I remember 12 being in there, and I remember being Millennium Falcon themed. And so I started making the label, and it's a minimal artistic label of the Millennium Falcon shooting across a star field with a trail behind it, which is kind of like a beer-colored trail. And in the beer-colored trail, I very lightly put less than, and then in the star field, 12 parsecs IPA. Now, IPA stuck out to me because that's kind of where the recipe led. So I had sent it to Dave, and he said he loved it. And then I said, that was the name, right? And he's like, no, the name was, let me put down, Parsec Pale Ale. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I can fix that. And he's like, no, leave this. This is great. Leave it like it is. So we kind of unofficially changed the name, mainly from my memory. I should have went back. I should have just asked him, obviously, what it was. But for some reason, I guess maybe I got carried away with the label. And we're I would say, stuck with. But we've now moved it from Parsec Pale Ale to less than 12 Parsecs IPA. So there we go. And I'm apparently very, well, I was going to say, I'm very optimistic that the addition of moonshine worked, and I actually put on the label alcohol 11.6% by volume, but I don't know how to measure this now once it's done, because I have no starting gravity. Well, there is no starting or ending when you add the moonshine. I guess I could, like, there's probably some kind of chemistry test I could do, but I'm not going to do that. So we're going to make the, when I say we, of course, I mean me, make the leap in faith that my numbers were right. I'm sure many of my early childhood teachers, which had no hope for me in life, were saying, there's no way in hell your math is right. But I've changed since then, like any of them are listening to this. So I'm pretty sure my numbers were right.
or right-ish, and we're going to say this is 11.6%. At least that's what the label is going to say. And we'll go from there. So tasting should be next, unless I decide to rename this again between now and then, but I still got quite a while to wait. I could actually do that. All right, the moment of truth, in a sense. Well, no, it is. The moment of truth is here. I'm about to test 12 Parsecs IPA for the first time. It's been aging for 3 weeks after the addition of the moonshine in the refrigerator at about 38 degrees. I am out in my garage because this is not going to be kegged. This is going to go straight in the bottle. So I have the tank that I use to carbonate and filter with and a picnic faucet tap on the other end. So I'm just going to pour a glass, check out the color, check out the carbonation, give it a taste, and that's it. There's really no time like the present to do it. So here we go. Okay, this is the first draw, so I'm going to dump this because it might have the line, what do you call it, the picnic line that I use, I clean, but I flush it out with water really, really well. But just in case, just to get the water out, make sure there's no water down taste. So I just poured that down the drain, and now I'm going to pour my real tasting glass. All right, here we go. First off, carbonation looks really good. I thought I might have went a little light, but it looks good. I'm not going to mess with it. Been having carbonation trouble again. I don't know why. Like my math is just off or something, but this looks good. I'm looking at it. You know what? I can get a real good light color here because I can look right in the sunlight at my garage door. This is a unique perspective. Wow. Okay. I'm happy to say no chill haze on this one. I didn't do any filtering difference, but there is no chill haze. So I guess I'm just lucky with this one. Again, I don't know. Oh, not again, because I'm getting confused here with episodes, because I explain some things in some episodes that I haven't released yet, and I refer back to them, but no one knows what I'm talking about. But let me just say, I address chill haze in another episode that you may or may not have heard yet. So that's where I'm going with that. So chill haze has been forefront of my mind in some episodes other than this one that may have been out or may not. I don't know. Looking at the color, it is a good amber color. That's about all I can say. It's like this is a more of a red ale than I intended to ever have with this. It just so happens to be red. It makes me very happy because I like red ales. Now let me give it let me test the aroma or smell the aroma. Little hoppy, and it is an IPA, so that's good. Not as hoppy as I expected, but still hoppy. And you can get the malts right under that. I don't smell the moonshine. That's interesting. Okay, I dipped it right through my nose. I don't smell the moonshine, so. All right, here we go. Maybe I'm being a little dramatic, but this is a big one for us, so I'm going to give it a taste right now. Okay, I am shocked how much I like this. It's actually very good. Let me taste it again. The main reason I'm shocked is I was afraid there's going to be a big booziness to it with the moonshine. On the sides of my cheeks, as weird as that sounds, on the inside of my mouth, I feel the alcohol burn. Not on my tongue, not in the finish. The IPA, it's a definite IPA. It could be a little hoppier. I think Dave would like it a little hoppier, but I don't think he's going to be upset by this. I'm going to give this another taste. This is very surprising. Wow. There's a little sweetness to it, too. A caramel sweet. I'll be honest. I'm a little lost for words here because I was ready to defend and explain why it was going to be horrible, and it's anything but. You can definitely taste that it's an 11%er because there is a, it's not a boozy taste, but the alcohol taste, but it's not dry. I really don't know what to say. I'm incredibly surprised. I really can't wait for Dave to taste this. I'm at a loss for words, so I'm not going to say anything else. I'm just going to start bottling this and wow, that's all I have to say is wow. So, the next recording, I think I'll talk about bottling, and it all depends on how fast I can get Dave to taste this. We may follow up on this special, or with a special, or this might be part of the episode.
The next recording will explain whatever that's going to be, but success. This is a success. I'm going to go right now and say it's a success on a lot of levels. Color, aroma, taste, beyond taste, what I ever expected, and we hit our mark of alcohol. I'm shocked. I am really shocked. If you've heard our radio dramas, you know I'm not that good of an actor, so this is all genuine. So, all right, that's it. I'm going to taste it one more time. This is shocking. All right. I'm really curious what Dave has to say about this. So, we'll find out. We'll just go on to whatever's next right now.
That is where we're going to end the recordings, with my tasting, because with this being taking so long, that doesn't sound right. It makes it sound like it's negative. For this process being a long process to get the beer to what we want it to be, the kegging this, or bottling this, really, was done much, much later in the year than I thought it was going to be. Dave will be here in about 2 months from when I'm sitting down recording this and releasing this episode. So we already talked about it. We're going to, the bottles are in the fridge. They're in the back of the fridge. They're getting nice and cold. They're still aging. We're just going to wait till Dave is here for his tasting. And in fact, because there's more beers in process right now as I speak that are Star Wars inspired or Star Wars and character inspired, and with Dave coming and the other guys from Star Wars and character coming and a couple other people from Neozaz coming, we're going to have a whole special of tasting that includes this one. In fact, I'll even give you a preview of the names and you can kind of figure, the names give them away. this is what the other Star Wars or Star Wars and character inspired beers are going to be. There's going to be Dark Apprentice Black IPA and Wilra Hood's Dream Come True Ale. That one, actually, that doesn't give it away. That one's going to be interesting. And all these will be, well, they'll have to have been, the episodes making these beers will have been released by the time they taste them because they'll be bottled and ready to go. So this episode is over, but this story is not over. So stay tuned sometime in late April, early May for that tasting episode when Dave's here and a bunch of other guys from Neozaz are here. And we'll get what their takes are on this beer, and I'm really curious to see what Dave's take is on this 12 Parsecs beer after everything we had learned and gone through and actually came up with in the end. So that is it for this episode. I'll say thank you for listening. If you're new to this series, if you're just joining us in this episode, the entire run of this series, past and future, are at neozaz.com. We also have a channel on iTunes. Everything that we post in social media to do with this show is including the taking photos of the process, some videos, and of course pictures of the final product are all on all of our social media pages through Neozaz, which is facebook.com/Neozaz Podcast for Facebook, at Neozaz on Twitter, and Neozaz on Instagram. So that is it. I will say thank you one more time for listening. I'll be back with a new episode. Still not sure which one that'll be because I've got quite a few things at different stages of fermentation and in the pipeline. So it'll be as big of a surprise to me as it is to you when the next episode is released. So until then, thanks again for listening, and I'll see you in that next episode.